done when you're near. Even though I'm gone, well, you're closer than you know. And I cover my ears, but it's you that I hear. And I close my eyes, see you dancing so near. When I get home, take my breath from your lips. Take my breath from your lips. Save those eyes that stretched 1 mile still, long between. There ain't nothing that can tame my fire, no dust that can quench. When you're moving, when you're still, well, you took that boat and filled it up with oak. All of this, and I swear my hands stop shaking when you're near. Even though I'm gone, well, you're closer than you know. And I cover my ears, but it's you that I hear. And I close my eyes, see you dancing so near. When I get home, take my breath from your lips. Take my breath from your lips. Every mile I'm holding you closer to me. Every mile brings me closer to you. Every mile I'm holding you closer to me. Every mile brings me closer to you. Every mile I'm holding you closer to me.
Okay, oops, interview is 29 for the 4th of September, and we have on the line here Mr. Andrew Johnson. Please go to his site, checktheevidence.com, and our little standard disclaimer. So I flip some switches and things here. Okay, that any views, opinions, or commentary expressed on this program are solely those of the individuals who are providing them, and there is no intention, either expressed or implied, to suggest that WSHC 89.7 Shepherd University or the Shepherd University Board of Governors is responsible for what may or may not be presented. Okay, Andrew, can you hear me okay? How's the connection? Andrew? Andrew's not there. Okay, well, Andrew, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you.
Okay, great. Sorry about that. Okay, well, yes, at least for the beginning of this little program, I wanted to cover the idea of crop circles. I guess it's a little bit more of an idea. We have at least photographic evidence. Now, one thing, I'll just at your site, checktheevidence.com, you have listed their upcoming talks in the UK, and I guess I should, if anyone hasn't heard, you are calling us up from Derbyshire, England, which I think is about 130 or so miles north and a little east of London. So thank you for speaking to us. It's been a little while, but you have been a relatively regular guest. But okay, 13 September, Beyond Knowledge, Liverpool. The subject is crop circles. So who's doing that, and what do you hope to cover with that?
Well, basically, that event has got a number of people that are coming. The two most well-known ones are Richard Hoagland is coming, and also Steve Bassett is coming, and there are a couple of people like Ralph Ellis, who I think is quite well-known. The presentation that I've put together is, as you know, has set crop circles. Now, this is one of the areas that I just haven't had time put onto my website. I've got a fairly detailed presentation, which I thought I might use as a framework for, you know, our discussion tonight.
Okay, certainly.
This afternoon, which I've got in front of me. You can get it on my website, but it's kind of like slightly hidden away. You know, it's not in an obvious place, and you can download it. And I sort of put this together in about, I think it was 2006, which I put this together, and there's, you know, I drew some quite interesting conclusions, really. And basically what I cover is sort of history of crop circles and the evidence for the actual, you know, the man-made crop circles.
Exactly.
Because yeah, I mean, they are, you know, we have to acknowledge those, that they are real.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually, as I discovered, a group which you can, you know, you can contract, in other words, you can pay them money, and they will make crop circle for you.
Really?
And they've done it for, you know, for advertising schemes, you know, for I think they did one for Nike, and they did one for a UK telephone company, saying that's on their website. So I cover that. And evidence for sort of crop circles being made possibly by some outside agencies. In other words, you know, maybe we want to call it aliens or extraterrestrials.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's some type of, you know, some people say that they're created by our interaction with the Earth consciousness, or vice versa, you know, the Earth's interaction with our consciousness.
Yes.
You know, that whole angle does come up.
I've heard that too.
And from what I've listened to and what I've read, and heard people saying, it's not something I can dismiss.
Okay.
You know,
yes.
As being total nonsense, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Another very interesting aspect of the crop circles is the messages within them.
Mm.
And I've really been thinking about these messages, and that there are real messages in these circles, real symbolic messages,
mm-hmm.
no doubt at all. I don't know if you've ever come across the crop circle, which I think is one of the most interesting of all. It's actually got a binary encoded message in it.
Okay.
Have you seen that? Ever heard of that?
What is the name of that? I'll Google it.
It's the, we could still come on to that bit later, but it's the, if you just put the alien head crop circle, and it's, I think it's Milk Hill, and it's actually got this binary encoded message within it. I call it the head crop circle.
Okay.
And Crabwood Farm.
That's interesting.
2002.
That is like a, it would be kind of, it reminds me of a long time ago, there used to be a thing where when you could have your picture taken, and then it would be rendered by a printer, and it's,
yes.
And something like this, you know. Now, interestingly enough, I was just a place, and I mentioned that I was going to be covering the subject, and of course the response was, well, they're all man-made. And I was like, well, yes, certainly, you know, some of them could be, but the thing is that some of these are so complex in their nature that now, while certainly I think you could probably find some engineers and, you know, to do this, but my thinking was, if human beings made these things, there would be such a large amount of damage with the surrounding area that's not a part of the picture. Does that make sense?
Yes, that's right. I think, you know, you'd look for some collateral damage around the actual circle, because, you know, if you're moving around, particularly creating an intricate pattern like this, where I think some of these lumps in this crop circle are probably only like a couple of feet across, or probably less.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got some very, very fine level of detail in circles like this. So, you know, I really started looking at this, I think it was about, in detail, in about 2005. I really tried to study it and see what's available for study, you know.
Okay.
But I visited a crop circle in 1987.
87?
My brother used to live down very near, or exactly in the region where most crop circles appear, and that's in Wiltshire in the UK. It's got the highest frequency of crop circles of anywhere in the world.
Okay.
And it's approximately about 120 miles from where I live, something like that.
Mm.
But I haven't, you know, I've never been down in the sort of years of the 90s and since the 1990s and the sort of last decade, because I haven't really had the chance, and it's just get, I think it just gets so hyped up now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
it's just too difficult to sort of get in there without worrying about offending farmers or, you know, whatnot.
Yes, I was trying to imagine how someone would do this. Now, they would almost have to have some sort of hovercraft type of thing to do this, to set it out. Now, what I did, what you just said, I put in alien head crop circle. I came up with the 2002, quote, alien face formation. This is at a site called cropcircleresearch.com. And 15th of August, 2002... and it has a good bit of commentary about it. And actually, that was exactly how I was thinking of approaching this. What exactly is the history? Like, as to the best of your knowledge, when was the first, you know, crop circle?
Earliest description of a crop circle was in 1686 by Professor Robert Plot.
Really?
Yep. He examined multiple such formations, and he states the soils under all of them were wetter and drier than ordinary, and the parts interspersed with a white haw, much like that in baldy bread, of a must rancid smell, but to the taste insipid. And that's from a natural Staffordshire in 1686. But I also did a bit of research into that, and some people say that was... that story's been made up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There are some etchings here that I've got in front of showing these formations that this guy supposedly, you know, saw. And then also from the Natural History of Craftsville, there was one at St. Giles's Fields at University College. The cloud and the trumpet-like diagram upper left, this was drawn on the page. That illustrates... there was this hypothesis that the crop circle was being blown, you know, by a wind into a formation. And if you look at this diagram, it shows an actual square-shaped trumpet.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he'd written in this, it must needs be the effects of lightning exploded from the clouds. In this case, the clouds are breaking first in a quadrangular and after in a wider circle form. So what he's describing is a square within a circle in this crop formation. So this is quite, you know, I'm just smiling because it's quite an unusual description. And the next one I found was in 1678, and this is, if you Google the mowing devil, you'll find it. And a 1678 pamphlet tells of a farmer who, refusing to pay the price demanded by a labourer to mow a field, swore that he would rather that the devil mowed it instead. And according to the pamphlet, that night his field appeared to be in flame. Next morning, the field was found to be perfectly mowed, supernaturally perfect, in fact.
Wow. Yeah, I did a search on that. It shows you the photocopy of the Hertfordshire early crop circles. Hertfordshire mowing devil.
Yeah, Hertfordshire, yeah.
Hartford, yeah, I'm trying to be correct in the pronunciation. Earliest known crop circle, known as the mowing devil, is shown on this woodcut from Hertfordshire, England, 1678. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it does definitely have a history. And then I moved forward, and the next one I found was in 1880, and that was in the science journal, Nature, because obviously by the 1880s, that Nature journal, which was the one that heavily debunked cold fusion in the 1980s, 100 years later, that published a letter from British spectroscopist J. Rand Cochrane, and he described his discovery and subsequent examination of multiple circular areas of flattened wool a farm in southern England. Forming circular spots with a few standing stalks as a centre, some prostrate stalks with their heads arranged pretty evenly in a direction, forming a circle around the centre, and outside these, a circular wall of stalks which have not suffered. Cochrane suggested that these flattened circles were there is some cyclonic wind action, so again, the sort of, you know, coming down to a weather explanation. And he also enclosed a sketch of the most perfect of these circles, but that sketch was not in the magazine, so we don't have a record of that. That was, you know, the 1880s. I didn't find anything between there and the 1960s.
Okay.
Next we'll move on to the 1960s. The earliest one was in 1966.
Which one was that?
These appeared in Australia.
Oh.
I think I've got these later in the presentation because what they were called were saucer nests.
What are you saying now?
You know, the nest of a flying saucer. You know, UFO nest, basically. That's what they were. That one was said to be. If you do saucer nest, as in flying, you know, flying saucer or
yeah.
a UFO nest or something, you'll probably find that picture. I put that later in the presentation as another, you know, another example sort of thing.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yep.
Actually, you're going just along the lines I was thinking of doing this. You know, the history, and also
yeah.
where now. Usually, you hear them occurring in England.
Yeah.
Have there ever been any crop circles in the United States?
Yeah, I haven't got that many in this presentation, but there's been much less in the States. But I know there's been some in Texas.
Okay.
I think there's been some in Minnesota and Colorado, I think. But again, it's when I did these searches, I came up with a few in Europe. And I think one or two in the States, maybe one or two in Canada, but very little really.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a good, very good website that I can recommend to people. It's probably one of the best from a scientific
okay.
point of view. And it's called the BLT Research. That's the initials of, I can't remember the name of the first guy, but it's W.C. Lavengood, that's the L. T is Talbot. I'm trying to remember the name of the first guy. I can't remember his name, but it's bltresearch.com, and they've got a lot of like the history, and they've got some studies from a Canadian crop circle. That's you know, one of the ones that I came across that wasn't English, where they'd actually gone in. You know, they'd taken soil samples, took them to a lab, and sort of analysed the crystalline structure of the soil, and found that it had been changed and stuff like this. So, you know, quite quickly we can say that if you're, you know, stomping down with a board, you ain't going to change the crystalline properties of the soil underneath, you know, of the compound.
That's
and
a
this
good
has
point.
Been repeated in several sites, several different locations, taking soil samples, and you could be that there's an effect of either heating or some change in the material, which you can't attribute to pressure from human feet or wood. You know,
exactly.
that type of thing. And there's another one, I don't think I've got the reference for this, but I have another chap that I know who lives about 10 miles from here, and he's done a lot of research into crop circles over the years, much more than I have.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells me this story of a crop circle where they found a dead porcupine in the middle, and it,
oh,
had
really?
Been it had been microwaved.
Really?
Yeah. I can't remember where that was, but you know, and I didn't really check it out. But that was a very interesting one.
Yes. I was going to say I'm at the BLTresearch.com
right.
site. It's interesting. They have a collage of pictures. It's rather amazing. I mean, certainly I'm up to believing that some of these things could be, you know, two drunk guys with a board and a rope. But some of these things, like the one I guess I had printed out actually earlier this last month, it was called Morgan's Hill, and I have
right.
I have three I have a panned out view. It's rather difficult to describe. There's like a border around the outside, a very intricate border, and then it's you have to see these things. I mean,
yeah, you do.
Now one thing was very interesting, a hypothesis that you brought up that I'd come across and sort of make sense, is that planets are in and of themselves living entities, and you know, you could say, well, lots of lines maybe to evidence to support that claim. One thing, there's an idea that there's a billion amps of electricity circulating within the Earth. This could somehow be an expression of the Earth itself. But yes, the intricacy of these pictures, I mean, sometimes I remember seeing some of these, I was absolutely, I mean, literally my breath taken away because of
yeah.
the astounding, intricate nature. One of them, I think I remember, it was sort of a DNA, a representation of a DNA chain.
That's right, yeah.
I mean, you know.
They are, I mean, some of them, there's been a couple of formations that if you take up the you know, the area of the experience that they cover,
mm-hmm.
it's like a thousand feet,
mm-hmm.
you know. It's, they're just huge.
Mm-hmm. And also, that kind of reminds me of the, now, forgive me, I don't know the details, but it's in South America. They have these huge drawings, these drawings that I guess the natives, the indigenous people, and I'm sure they're relatively old. Forgive me, I really never do research for this. I just have an idea and come in with it. But you know what I mean? The drawings, like in the South American, I guess probably they're in the desert, and there are these massive, massive pictures that they're made, I guess, by just simply stacking up rocks. And really, you know, the idea is, how could you make these pictures? Because basically they can be seen from space or at a very high altitude. Do you know what I'm talking about? What are those things called? I don't know. It's but anyway, there are quite a few of those drawings in the desert made of, and they're huge. They're like a mile across or something.
Yeah. Right.
But,
whereabouts is this again?
I believe, well, geez, powers of Googling, probably should be able to find it. I believe they're in South America, I think, for the most part.
Oh, the Nazca, are you thinking of the Nazca line, sorry.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
That's
actually very interesting to make that comparison between the crop circles and the Nazca lines.
How are you spelling that, N-A-S?
N-A-Z-C-A.
Okay. Ah.
N-A-Z, as you would say.
I'm having a little bit of trouble. Some person came in here and spilled a soda on the keyboard, so I'm going to have to complain about that. But anyway, N-A-Z-C...
Z, correct.
Wow. N-A-Z-C-A... Lines. Okay. World Mysteries, Misty Places, Nazca Lines, and the Cahuachi Culture. Actually, I should go back there. Actually, it's Peru. There's a bunch of them in Peru.
Maybe
that's where they are exclusively. But now we have quite a few of these pictures. There's actually some YouTube videos on them. So, and those things, I guess, are relatively old.
They're thousands of years old. In fact, there's a good... somebody just sent me a link to... the History Channel documentary called Ancient Aliens, and they did a program on Eric von Däniken, and that's, they posted it, somebody's posted it in parts on YouTube, there's 9 parts, and it's very, very interesting, because I was familiar with the Nazca lines you just mentioned. I got distracted when you were talking a few minutes ago, somebody was typing a message to me on Skype, and with what they showed in this documentary, which I wasn't all familiar with, is that some of the mountain peaks in Nazca where these lines have been made have actually been flattened. They've taken off the peaks of some of these mountains. You know,
really?
I've never heard of this before.
That's a tremendous amount of excavation.
You know, it's just amazing. And if you look at these sort of mountain, these mountains, you know, where they've got their peaks, and then one in the middle hasn't got its peak, it's been taken off. And one of these lines or runways put on it, you know, it's just beggar's belief. You know, I've never heard of that before. And, you know, they never talk about that.
This one I'm looking at is quite obviously kind of it's a monkey with a very curled up tail, a very thin body, and I'm trying to get the dimensions of it. It's, this picture, I would say, is at the very least, it's more than 10,000 feet above ground level, is this photograph taken.
Right.
So, I mean, on the ground, this would be meaningless. I mean, well, you certainly wouldn't see the monkey. You might see some trail.
Eric von Däniken says, well, you know, these things are only visible from the air. Why are you going to... If you're living an existence which is hand-to-mouth, you know, and you've got sparse food supplies, I mean, maybe they didn't have sparse food supplies, but why are you spend all this time drawing these pictures which are only visible from the air, you know? Maybe it was just part of their religion, but very strange. Very strange.
Yes, at any rate, it did take a good bit of technological skill to do these things. Now, maybe going back to your site, checktheevidence.com, you have a conference that will be, I guess that would be in 9 days. Jim Mars, yes, he kind of, I haven't been to his site. I think one time some years back I tried to get him as a guest, and it's always difficult to get people sometimes, but it says an award-winning journalist and the New York Times best-selling author of Rule by Secrecy, Alien Agenda, and Crossfire, which served as a basis for the Oliver Stone film JFK. He lives in rural North Central Texas. So he's actually had quite a few speakers at this conference.
Right. Yes, I mean, there's Steve Bassett, who's done a lot with the trying to get the sort of presidential decision. I think he's going to be successful, but I do admire his tenacity, and his enthusiasm is quite infectious for what he's doing. But I think it could be quite a good conference, because there's 2 days and there's quite a few interesting people going. I sort of feel very much out of place, actually, because there are people who have sort of written books and all this sort of thing. And I just haven't done that, so, I'm not that well, I haven't really had that sort of time to spend on it, because I've got my own work that I have to do to earn a living, you know.
Absolutely, yes.
But going back to the crop circles,
okay,
which we can if you want to.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
And actually later on, what I've added to this presentation since I first did it, I think I've actually found a link to 9/11.
Okay.
In terms of some of the events that have happened in crop circles, which I can perhaps talk about later.
Oh, absolutely.
We've got the first photographs in England that of crop circles coming in 1978, with a few from Switzerland in 1975 and 1976, who I found, but I couldn't find actual copies of these photographs. So the earliest one I was able to find from England was in 1985, which was the 31st of July at Longstock in Hampshire, and that was photographed by Busty Taylor, who I've communicated with a few times. Busty Taylor's got one of these light aircraft, and he flies all over the crop circles to photograph them from the air. Good guy, you know, he's very, very dedicated to doing that for sort of like, well, since 85, which is what, 24 years, isn't it? So he's been doing that for a quarter of a century now. So, and then, 1989, we've got a fairly big one in Winterbourne, which is near Stonehenge. That's, I've got a picture here. And I've got one of my own pictures in this presentation, which I took in 1987, which the crop circles seem to be centred around Silbury Hill quite often.
Okay.
And so, have you ever heard of Silbury Hill at all?
Not much. I think it's sort of familiar name, but...
Well, Silbury Hill, it's the largest man-made mound in Europe. In other words, it's about, I think, about 100, maybe 100 feet higher, something like that. And it was made, they don't know when, I think perhaps 5,000 years ago. And in relation to Avebury and Silbury Hill, there is a correspondence with Cydonia on Mars.
Really?
With these two features on Mars. Quite strange.
Well, that's interesting. I actually guessed the correct spelling. It's Silbury Hill.
Correct.
And you
get
quite a lot of responses. There's actually a few pictures here. You've got a rather large mound.
Yes.
But go ahead. I'm sorry. Earth Mysteries, Silbury Hill. Just a brief introduction. Silbury Hill, located just south of the village of Avebury in Wiltshire, is a massive artificial mound with a flat top. It is approximately 130 feet high, with a base circumference of 1,640 feet. It is composed of over 12 million cubic feet of chalk and earth, and covers over 5 acres. Silbury Hill occupies a low-lying site, and except at certain points in the landscape, it does not protrude significantly above the horizon. It was built in 3 stages. First begun around 2660 BCE, the last phase comprised the building of 6 concentric steps or terraces of chalk, which were then covered with chalk rubble, flints, gravel, and finally soil to form a cone shape. Now, there's a tremendous amount of labor over a very long time to make this.
Mm-hmm.
So you got any speculation as to what's the point? Or?
Well, I think they don't really know. I mean, I think it was said to be a burial chamber. That's obviously the standard explanation that comes up. But I think when they did some excavations, they couldn't find any evidence of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think this area, things like Silver Hill, I forget the name of the guy, but there's a guy, I could probably find it on my computer if I try, I'll try and find it later, but there is a guy, what he's done is, he's been experimenting with the idea that a lot of these stone circles were to do with increasing the yield from crops.
Uh-huh.
In other words, they were designed such that they would capture earth energies of an unknown type. And they'll be focused this energy onto the seeds, and then when they plant the seeds, they get a better yield for their crop.
Okay.
I wish I could remember the name of this guy. He's actually done this in a laboratory.
Okay.
He's worked out that, you know, if you look at the magnetometer readings from the ground, you know, where stones are, and the electrical resistivity, you know, and you put these seeds in certain places, they do actually grow better.
Hmm.
And he's had control samples, so he's put one inside a stone circle or whatever, or one on top of the stone in a stone circle, something like this, grown them, and then he's had another one which hasn't been in the stone, you know, from the same group of seeds, and the ones that have been in the stone circle, the stalks come out stronger, the longest, taller and more seed heads, whatever, consistently. He's actually set up a business based on this technology, because he can now simulate this energy, you know, with magnetic fields that he creates with his equipment, and he bags of seeds into this field, something like this, you know, and then basically he can sell to farmers who don't want to use, or fertilizers or whatever other methods they use to increase the yield. He does it with his energy beams, and he's making money out of this. So, you know, so there does seem to be something in this idea that crops, circles and things like Silbury Hill, which are built to either focus or trap certain earth energies, may have been built as a method for increasing the yield from crops. You know, if you have a big bag of seed and you carry it up to the top of Silbury Hill, or, you know, you lay it round the sides of the hill at certain heights, you know, in stages or something, maybe they found that this was the way to improve the crop yield. You know, and for an existence like that, where you're living with very basic technology, maybe it was worth the effort if it did increase the yield substantially.
There's a paragraph from this last site I was at, of course, talking about Silver Hill. There's another explanation, argues that Silver Hill could have been used as an accurate solar observatory by means of the shadows cast by the mound itself on the carefully leveled plain to the north towards Avebury. The meridian line from Silbury runs through Avebury Church, which stands on a ley line running between Stonehenge and the stone circle at Winterbourne Abbas. The same ley line also passes through two churches and the eastern slope of Silbury. Silbury, in fact, is a center for alignments of straight prehistoric tracks resurfaced by the Romans and of standing stones. The Roman road between Marlborough and Bath runs directly towards Silbury Hill before swerving to avoid it. This would indicate that the Roman road followed a pre-existing track or ley line. There's a statement, John Mitchell makes the following observations. In view of the fact that in China, mounds like that at Silbury were erected upon Lung Mei, the paths of the dragon, there is good reason to suspect that Silbury itself was sighted by pre-Celtic druids on a dragon line with the assistance of a geomancer's compass. It may also be inferred that the Chinese Lung Mei stretch over the entire globe. Many centers of English dragon legend stand at the junction of well-marked leys, one notable long-distance example being the St. Michael's line that runs from the Avebury Circle to the extreme west of Cornwall. That was mentioned in the View Over Atlantis from 1983.
Yeah, so, you know, you get into all those sorts of things with ley lines, and, you know, I don't know a great deal about that, but, you know, it's very interesting to find out about these ley lines, earth grids, and earth energies, you know, and it does seem like there is, you know, something going on in all of that. side of things. You know, you can't really brush it to one side.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So Silver Hill and that whole area, you know, I've been to a couple of times. Avery is a very interesting place, and you've actually got this village surrounded by a stone circle, or in fact there's a kind of an inner stone circle in the middle of the village and then a ditch. The village is built inside a big sort of ditched area, you know. If you Google it, you'll see the aerial view does look quite interesting, and it has actually got sort of these mini ramparts around it, you know.
Hmm.
And all the crop circles seem to be focused around that area, you know, or about 90% of them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if we get a good picture. But if you just Google Avery, you sort of find it. The first link that comes up is National Trust.
Yes, we have the same site here. It has a silvery, can clearly be seen in the background, and in summit, in line with the horizon, a drawing made by William Starkey of the part of the sanctuary in 1723.
Well, there you go.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I first saw my first crop circle, you know, in front of me, as it were. I didn't go in it because we didn't want to trespass in the fields.
Okay.
In 1987, I do apologise.
I was going to say, from your vantage point, could you make out the picture that it was, or the drawing, or
It was, the picture I've got was just basically one circle with four smaller circles around it. Very simple design. It looks like sort of like a number five on a dice. The central spot is, you know, an enlarged circle sort of thing. That was the sort of configuration that these circles were in.
Mm-hmm.
So it could easily have been a man-made one, for all I know.
Okay.
My brother, actually, at the time, he used to work on the farms. He was what's called an agronomist.
Okay.
In other words, he'd go around to these farms and see the farmers, and they would buy, you know, fertilizer or other chemicals, unfortunately, off him to use on their land, you know. So he used to actually see some of these crop circles, and I think he got to know a little bit about the farmers and what their attitude was to them. I think a lot of them weren't that impressed with what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think basically what point I didn't bring out is that the crop circles in the 70s and 80s were very basic, very simple, just, you know, one or two circles, maybe you get two or three in a line, and just very, very simple formation, not really any obvious pattern. But it was July the 10th, 1990, the village of Old Barnes. You got your phone going off there.
Oh, yeah, sorry about that. I turned off something.
Right.
Electromagnetic radiation, cell phones are not good. Yeah, that's a whole other subject. Okay.
Yeah, and the inhabitants of a village called Alton Barnes, which again is in Wiltshire, they heard a cute buzzing sound, and this caused all the dogs in the village to bark throughout the night. And as the dawn came in the Vale of Pusey, none of the farmers' cars would start, it says here.
Hmm.
And as they approached their fields, no one could believe their eyes, because a 603-foot-long pictogram was in the wheat.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an album by Led Zeppelin with this version of this pictogram on the cover. If you're familiar with that,
what's the name of that one? Let me Google that.
Led Zeppelin. I can't. Or
the name of the
Led Zeppelin crop circle.
Crop circle. Well, I guess I could just do that. Yeah.
Yeah, put Led Zeppelin crop circle. I can't remember the name of the album. Let's see. Yeah, that's the one.
Wow. I'd like to talk to the person that spilled their soda on this keyboard.
If they messed up your keyboard.
Yeah. Wow. I guess I'll have to bring mine in. Google is not working with... Somehow I'm not.
At least you can get a cheap keyboard.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, we got some new people, I guess. I don't know what's going on. So it is a rather interesting and rather large subject. Of course, a lot of people, you know, maybe like the gentleman I kind of just briefly referenced, you know, just dismiss it as, well, that's just, okay, yes. Yes, now that's familiar. Led Zeppelin cross circle, a crop circles. You can get a T-shirt.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that cover. I'm not sure if it's an actual photograph. I'm sort of only researching this for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Speak to you. You know, I was familiar with this cover, but I wasn't sure whether it's an actual photograph or whether it's an artist's impression.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they must have put the shadow of the Zeppelin over the actual thing. But the design shown, I think, is actually, let's look at this other picture, I think it's pretty accurate.
Yeah,
yes, it is.
So if you Google Led Zeppelin crop circle, you'll get a whole page with all kinds of pictures.
Yeah, but obviously the show of the Zeppelin, as I say, has been superimposed, but the actual design, that really did appear in a field, in this field of Alton Barn, near Alton Barns in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, you know, worth mentioning, we call these pictograms, or people call these pictograms. Mm-hmm. There doesn't seem to be any obvious message.
Mm.
It's just, there may be a message, but it's not obvious what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just...
Because that's the next question. It's like, what's the point? You know, why? What's the point? That's the big question.
Exactly.
That's the whole point,
and
I guess. What's the point?
Yeah, exactly. You know, perhaps we can think about that later.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing I discovered was something called fairy rings.
Okay.
These are formed quite often when you get a fungus, like a big mushroom.
Okay.
And it will grow up in the middle of a piece of ground, and then the spores will be ejected outwards radially in a circle from where the mushroom is, and around that radius, that will form a pattern of, you know, circle of growth of either fungus or other things which feed off the fungus, and so you end up getting these fairy rings.
Okay. Got a couple of pictures, searched on that. Yeah, it's interesting.
So, you know, you can actually find circular formations of growth, but it's not the same as crop circles because they're not flattened, you know, but there are, you know, some people say, oh, these crop circles are just because that's how the crop's grown in the circle, and obviously that's nonsense. It's just another circular formation in the ground that you can sort of discover. Said to be made by elves dancing in a circle to music, before, when people weren't looking.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing.
Who knows?
But the other thing that I found as well was with non-geometric crop formations, you can get a process called lodging, where the intense weather systems come down, and I saw this from the air when I actually flew over to Japan in July for some work there for a week. And as I was coming back into Birmingham Airport, I was looking down at the field and I could see the crop had been flattened quite a bit in certain areas. But I knew this wasn't crop stuff. I think it was just rain and wind that actually damaged the crop and made it fall down. And sometimes that can occur in patterns, you know, which in the same way you can sometimes see patterns in the clouds. There are patterns in the clouds of that, I'm sure now. You can see these chemtrail ribbons and stuff if you look for long enough.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you still do see shapes in the clouds. And, you know, that you can obviously see the same sorts of thing in these lodging crop formations. So, you know, I'm just trying to cover all the explanations, that you can put out there to make sure we've covered them.
Mm-hmm.
So we can have crops being blown down in a particular way that makes a pattern, but it's nothing like what we see with the alien head and such like that.
Yes, quite obviously there is some form of intelligent design at work.
Yeah,
that is undeniable.
Yeah. And then I discovered that some of these circles get revisited, and this happened with one of the ones this year. I'd have to go and check the actual. There was another one this year, and it started off with a fairly complicated pattern, and it was, I think, about 300 or 400 feet across. And then the next night, it was added to, and then the next night after that, it added to again. So the only time that has changed three times in three nights.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite interesting.
Yeah, one interesting part about this that I've heard some eyewitness accounts is that supposedly some of these have appeared in a very brief space of time, you know, like within minutes, And someone say the testimony is that, you know, who knows, maybe they just made it up, but the idea is that, you know, they are in this area and they know that this image or whatever it is was not there, and then a very brief space of time, there it is. So, you know, it happened. There has to be an explanation somehow. So
absolutely. There are a number of witnesses of that. And in fact, Nancy Talbot of BLT Research said she witnessed a beam of light coming down.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were in the Netherlands. They were in Europe at the time. And this was, I think, in 2001, I think. I'd have to go on the story. But she actually witnessed a beam, and then they had a crop formation. So we have seen this. Beams of light have been seen coming down. They've had also balls of light that are called BOLs, you know, balls of light.
Mm-hmm.
Seen those. Ed Sherwood has actually talked about those quite a lot. He's witnessed plasma balls making circles and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He interacts with the intelligence that creates them and
mm-hmm.
and all this sort of thing. So what then came across was this chap, who I mentioned earlier on, who lives about 10 miles away. He did some research in the early 90s, and there were a number of crop circles found quite near here, actually. Let's see where it was. I just want to get the exact place, because it was only about 20 miles from where I was. I never saw these.
Okay.
But it was, where was it? Carlton, yes. Carlton, Trent, and Mansfield, which are in Nottinghamshire. We don't get many formations in Nottinghamshire. And what he actually found was he got something called a microdepth meter. And the microdepth meter was able to measure the electromagnetic field on the ground. And so they walked along this field measuring the electromagnetic field with this meter, and you know, took readings down.
Mm-hmm.
And they noticed that it changed when you got if you got onto a ladder and you stood on a ladder or whatever, a big ladder, and you were able to get 12 feet above the ground, or you put this thing on a pole and mm-hmm. held it up, they found that the electromagnetic field changed 12 feet above the ground, and in a circle, when they went to a crop circle and measured the electrostatic readings there, much, much higher. In fact, it went off the scale.
Mm-hmm.
So they were able to measure a physical difference between the crop circle and the surrounding area in terms of the electromagnetic field. It was different. And this has been reported many, many times with electromagnetic effects within the circles, you know, and camera batteries failing, cameras going wrong, other electronic equipment failing mm-hmm. and not being usable again. Many, many times that's been reported. So there does seem to be a residual effect.
Uh-huh.
And what had been postulated by the chap that had done this research, or I think there was another guy that did it with him, he wasn't him at all. So I've got this diagram here which, you know, basically is showing we've got the solar wind coming off the sun, which is a stream of charged particles.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sun generates a stream of ions, you know, continuously. It's called the solar wind,
mm-hmm.
which radiates out and impinges in the Earth's atmosphere, and it creates the aurora borealis and the aurora australis, you know, in the north and south poles. And what this chap was proposing is that there was some kind of interaction with the solar wind and the Earth's magnetic field, which there is, of course. But he was also proposing that this interaction could extend to ground level under certain special circumstances.
Mm.
And he said is that the just before dawn, the Earth's energies are at their maximum level, and the highest charges are being formed along the Earth's terminator point, where the particle magnetic interaction and chemical effects and electrostatic effects are all taking place. All these forces combine give a massive kick of energy through the atmosphere, so he's sort of combining these effects.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says that there could be some kind of particle interaction causing like a beam of ionization, particularly if you get some type of vortex effect, you know, a certain type of wind.
Mm-hmm.
It all seems sort of pretty much a set of coincidences. So again, I think if indeed it does happen, it probably only explains one or two of the circles that we see.
Mm-hmm.
But he's basically talking about an interaction between the sun's solar wind, the Earth's magnetic field, mm-hmm. and the Earth's energies conspiring to make a circular sort of beam, which would then form a crop circle.
Mm-hmm.
I did a search on Nottinghamshire, and I came up. I've been going through. I've been listening, but I went through quite a long list of YouTube videos about supposedly. Okay, here's one: plane passenger films UFO. Then it goes into Russian military and United States military fighter jets filming something. Now, of course, you know. Granted, with our digital capabilities, it could be faked, but it looks pretty interesting. Plane passenger films, you have a, I don't know, you know. I'm sort of open to just about any explanation, but at least some kind of explanation that makes sense, you know. I don't know if that makes any sense, if something that makes sense, but something other than two drunk guys with a rope and a board, I mean, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, and we can get some form of explanation if we keep looking. You know, this is what I've found in doing all of this, that if you keep looking,
mm-hmm.
you do start to find certain things that make sense. You know, quite often you can't piece together all of it. But, you know, I think I've got something of an idea of what's going on with some of the crop circles, at least now.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've mentioned, I think some of it sort of ties into 9/11 in some respects.
Okay.
What I found from this study, which was quite interesting,
mm-hmm.
The one I was just referring to, which was done in Nottinghamshire, is that the chap that I got in touch with, he gave me these diagrams that he'd made, and he found that in these fields where these crop circles had been made, a lot of the stems were damaged in a particular way,
mm-hmm.
and at a height of 55 centimetres above the ground,
mm.
you'd get a burn mark, and the crop would be bent over backwards on itself, you know, bent down towards the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always at a height of 55 centimetres. Now, 55 centimetres may be specific to a wavelength, and I believe that 55 centimetres, I'm just going to check this, mm-hmm. but I'm pretty sure that it's in the microwave band.
Okay. Yes, I have come across that before, that the forensic examination of the vegetation at these sites has been altered by some form of electromagnetic radiation.
That's right. I've got microwave ovens use a radiation of a wavelength 12.5 centimeters. So. You know, that's sort of within the range of you know, this sort of centimeter wavelength range,
mm-hmm.
And you can see these burn marks. You know these are quite a consistent feature, and there are certain effects on the plants which have been taken away and studied in a laboratory, and also some plants have been in a crop circle. They've, you know, taken them out and then regrown them in pots, and the ones that have been in the crop circle.
Mm-hmm.
have been grown differently to the ones that have been in the crop circle as controls.
Mm-hmm.
So there is definitely an effect on the actual plants within the crop circles.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I discovered as well. And then what I came on to was study which I mentioned earlier, which was the Canadian study, and that was done in September 1999 in Edmonton, Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
And also this particular field, the interesting thing about it was a field of Canadian thistle where you can't really walk through it without protective boots.
Wow.
So, and this formation they have here, they've got, this is on the BLTresearch.com site.
Okay.
Let's see, they've got, 58-meter circle, an 11-meter circle, and a 5.7-meter circle. We've got about, let's see, 7 circles in this formation that are joining and forming a symmetric pattern.
Now, and the name of that particular one again?
It's in Edmonton, Alberta, in 1999. So, And that's on bltresearch.com. So if your keyboard will allow you to enter those characters.
Yeah, it's my one enter button is all full of sugar. Okay. Okay, got a report. Yeah, actually, one thing I was rather mesmerized with, I found a, I think I still have it up. It's a it's a YouTube, it's a slideshow. It's called, well, YouTube, I don't know, of course, you know, when you're surfing, who knows where you will wind up, but it's impossible-part-04-crop circles, and it's a 5.5-minute slideshow of all these different crop circles. And just some of them are just, you know, some of them are maybe kind of plain, but some of them are rather astonishing. I mean, it, but...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've got a collection of about 20 on the slide of the first slide of this presentation. They are very, very intricate. Some of these really quite extraordinary. You know, we've got the eye in the pyramid symbol in one crop circle with quite a lot of detail. You know, in the middle. And one of the things that's been become very popular in the last few years, of course, the Mayan calendar symbolism, which. I'll probably mention as we get towards the end, because I've had some additional thoughts on that recently, which I can mention. Looking at this BLT site, and I think this was from the Canada study in Edmonton that we mentioned.
I've got pictures up there.
Yeah, and they took soil samples and they got clay samples and they extracted from the surface soils and they put them into a machine and did some X-ray diffraction analysis. So they're obviously doing some, you know, proper scientific testing with proper instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a doctor, Robert C. Reynolds, he writes, "Possibility of crystal growth seems remote. The degree of pressure known to be involved in causing crystal growth in sedimentary deposits would have, had it been present, completely obliterated the plants. And of 600 to 1800 degrees C temperatures over a period of several hours known to be necessary to promote such crystal growth in the laboratory would have, in the crop circle, incinerated any plant present."
Mm-hmm.
What he's basically saying is they found these crystals which had grown, you know, to a larger size than they would normally be in those types of soils. And that would take temperatures of 600 to 800 degrees centigrade.
Mm-hmm.
And it is additionally the very brief burst of possibly intense microwave radiation thought to be the cause of the node elongation and the creation of the expulsion cavities through heating and expansion of internal stem moisture, but not account for the crystal growth. So in other words, he's talking about microwave effect damaging the actual plant, some type of other effect, actually causing changes in the soil. That's what it boils down to, the sort of physical changes in the component of the soil, which you just wouldn't get with somebody standing on it with a board. It wouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm still looking at this Edmonton crop circle formation discovered 21 September 1999. The one interesting thing kind of has an exploded view. It says the lay of the crop in all seven circles is radial, but a narrow clockwise ring borders each circle. At left is an exploded view of the three different actions that seem to have affected the plants. And I guess the first one is just about a ring in a counterclockwise direction. The next layer is radiating from the center out, and then the next layer is kind of hard to describe. It's sort of... you guys should have to see it. I don't know. But a lot of... weird things going on here.
That's right. I mean, it's very complicated to try and make sense of it because there is so much information and there are a lot of contradictory things seemingly, you know, cropping up as well. So it is a hard one to resolve.
And excuse me, Andrew, we have to do our station ID. This is WSHC Shepherdstown. We're speaking with Andrew Johnson. His website is checktheevidence.com, and we're broaching the concept or the phenomenon of crop circles. And I guess I could just briefly do abbreviated disclaimer that there is no intention to suggest that the Shepherd University Board of Governors is responsible for this program. So, yeah, whatever. So, yes, so we've been kind of scratching the surface. It is a rather large topic. Maybe most people don't care. I don't know. It might be interesting to do some sort of survey, ask 100 people, have you ever heard of crop circles? What do you think? Do you care? Whatever.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people aren't bothered because they, like the chap you mentioned earlier, they just think it's people messing about.
Yes.
Same with the UFO topic, they just think it's people messing about. But if you have an opportunity to just sit down with them and go through some of the strange circles,
yes,
there are a few people you might actually get, but a lot of them, as long as they've got their beer, as long as they've got the food and the car full of gas.
Uh-huh. Oh, exactly. Yeah. Oh, yes, I've used that on lots of subjects.
We know the score.
Yes, I'm going through this slideshow again. Rather amazing. So many topics that really the same type of template could be placed over the subject, I guess, if that's making any sense. Checking the evidence, I think it all boils down to that, and maybe, the psyops, yes. Next week, I thought I might try to cover the subject of psychological warfare. And I don't know if I really want to do the rest of the program on this, but you did have a mention, you've been mentioning a couple times, is that there is some type of connection to these phenomena and the events of 11 September 01. What is that?
Yes, yes. Well, I think if we work through a little bit more, then I can sort of describe what that is. I've sort of given a clue in terms of microwaves and energy effects and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm sorry.
But there's some specific incident which I only came across about, I think it was about February, March this year, which really tweaked my antennae with that connection. One of the other interesting things which might tie into what we just said in terms of the energy fields is we've already mentioned a few times where the most crop circles appear, and that is in the sort of south of England, Wiltshire, Hampshire, that sort of area. And what's unusual about that area is that it's what's called the biggest chalk aquifer in Europe.
Okay.
In other words, it's the largest area where the ground is mainly, under the immediate surface, is made out of chalk. And chalk is a porous rock, so the water will sink through the chalk to a certain level to the water table. And that whole area is the biggest chalk aquifer in Europe. And I think I could also get, and do this right, and you bear with me a second. I've got a guy called Freddie Silver, who's a crop circle researcher. If I do this, I can probably play this sample of him talking about the chalk aquifer thing.
Okay.
But let's just see if I can.
Let me comment. I've been going through the slideshow again, YouTube, impossible dash part 04 dash crop circles, and it is just, I've seen this one before. It's just, I don't even know how to begin to describe it. It is unbelievable. There's a center circle, and then there are 6 spokes coming out from the center. They are in a, you can't describe this. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, I don't even think human engineering might be, you get a bunch of engineers together, you could probably, first of all, how would you lay this out? You could probably do it. It would be very, very labor intensive. It'd be an extreme amount of math. But the thing about that is the entire area around this would be trampled. You couldn't even do it because the area that is not part of the circle would be completely smashed. There is no way, looking at something like this, there is no way that human beings made this. I do not believe, And I don't want to even speculate as what caused it, but if you look at something like this, okay, never mind.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, the more that you look at them, and the more variation that you see, and you begin to get a grasp of the complexity of some of them, you do think this is not. This has to be some external
unimaginable complexity and the symmetry.
Yes. Yes.
And how the other area is not damaged at all, and it's just. I would like to know what exactly is doing this, but I don't, at this point, I don't even have any speculation. This is really wild.
Now, one of the interesting things is, you know, before we go on to the sort of more deeper stuff, as it were, I came across this Circle Makers group, which I mentioned earlier on, and they actually call themselves Circle Makers.
Okay.
And they've got a website called circlemakers.org, all one word.
Okay.
I'll see if this website is still active, because it's a couple of years since I looked at this. But if you go onto there, they will show you some of their portfolio, I think. Let's just see if they've still got this website going.
And
yeah, they have.
What was the name of it? Circle?
Circlemakers.org.
Okay.
And you can see, yeah, they've got a whole... It's a nice, quite a nice website. They've got John Lundberg... and another guy called I think Rod Dickinson is in, I think he's involved with this. They don't hide their identity. Some people hate them.
Okay.
The crappies really hate them because they think they're vandals, but actually they're not really vandals. You know, because they do it with agreement. They've done some as you know, for corporate advertising and that sort of thing, with permission from. I've got a picture here with one that they did. It wasn't a crop circle they did, but they made this giant logo on Blackpool Beach in the sand, you know, and they planned all that out, and I've got this little picture of a blueprint. But the interesting thing is, so, you know, you get a feel from that as to how complicated it is to do a very simple design. In fact, they've got a blueprint for a number 8 that I've got in front of me. This is why I showed this. They've got a number 8, and let's see, on this blueprint they've got measurements, they've got, let's see, about 8 different circles, intersect the right point to make this figure 8 in the right place, and they've got measurements. So just for this figure 8, one single figure 8, we've got quite a complicated diagram that they've done for their plan, for their design, just for the number 8. So to look at some of these other that they've done, I think I've got another one here. Yeah, they've got another one where they've drawn out all the lines. They did one for, let's see, I remember the Levellers. There's a pop group called the Levellers.
Okay.
And they made a crop circle for this pop group, the Levellers, to be in a music video.
Oh, really?
And there was a video production company, it was called Junk 72.
Uh-huh.
And this was a 200-foot crop formation they did. I'm just seeing...
Well,
I'm not sure when they did it, but how long it took them to do it. It was done in August 2002 in West Sussex. Took about 4 hours to construct, they said. So that was done in daylight.
Actually, I got a name for the one I was trying to describe. It's Milk Hill Wilts, August 2001. It's an astonishing complexity, the circles, and it just, it's, you know, whatever. You have to see it. You can't really describe it.
I'll try and find that one, because I might, if that's one of the older ones, I might well have seen it.
August 2001, Milk Hill Wilts.
Okay. Yeah. Put that in and see if I can see if I might even have that in my presentation. I'm not sure.
Oh, I would think so. Rather at a loss for words.
Oh, that one. Yes. That's enormous, yeah. It's like a radial pattern, isn't it? Like a sort of one of these. I don't know if you have a thing called spirograph over there. We've got these where you have a cog inside another cog, and you put a pen inside it.
Yes.
And then you spin the cog round, and it makes a pattern inside the. I don't know if you've ever seen one of those. You can have different sized cogs, so you get a different number of repetitions of the pattern. So yeah, I have seen that one, but I haven't got it in my presentation. But yeah, that's interesting. It says that on this page that I've got, it links to the 9/11 conspiracy. I've never seen that before.
It says date it was first observed, Milk Hill Wilts, 12 August, the 224th day of the year. It comprised a central circle from which 6 curved spokes, also made of circles, radiated. When viewed from above,
These radial spokes curved in a clockwise direction and formed six closed loops. Each spoke was endowed with a central spine of 13 larger circles, which I call main circles, and these were flanked by smaller circles, which I call satellites, in clusters of 1, 2, or 3. 12 of the main circles in each spoke were flanked by matching sets of satellites on both sides, but the sixth main circle, counted from the end near the structure center, was devoid of satellites on the convex side, as shown in the following symbolic representation of a typical spoke. But yeah, you have to see it. It's really not described.
Yeah, it is. You do to see it. But yeah, just going back to that circle maker thing.
Okay.
So what I wanted to mention was one little thing. You can go onto their website and you can read this. And it's an account by one of the actual circle makers. After about an hour, we three circle makers converged to the same point and began quietly discussing our progress. My attention was drawn to a light that had appeared from nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
It was a few hundred yards away and directly in front of us. As soon as I had registered its presence, I alerted my colleagues. Amazed, we stood there gazing at this football-sized orange light as it hung motionless about 40 feet above the surrounding countryside.
Mm-hmm.
After an estimated 5 seconds, the light began to slowly descend. Within another 5 seconds, it had descended about 10 feet and had faded into invisibility. Little time to spare, we excitedly returned to our work, always hopeful of a repeat performance. Subsequent daylight checks revealed no evidence of the light's existence. That year also saw a large increase in the number of luminosities reported around circle sites. Did we witness a naturally occurring phenomenon, or were we really being scanned by genuine circle makers? And then there was another one, partway through the construction of the formation, there was a powerful burst of light. All stopped, looked around, and after a bit of head-scratching, continued the formation. This was soon afterwards by an identical burst of light. And so they've seen these flashes of light. Light flash that seemed to emanate from the back of my own retina, from nowhere at all, in fact. I ran to where John was standing. You saw that one? Yeah, I say. Saw isn't the right word. 10 minutes later, I pick up a second. So, weird things are happening to them, and one of them reports missing time as well. I think I can't remember, I've got it on the slide, but, they're actually walking across the field, and one of them goes down into a dip so that they can't see him,
mm-hmm.
and then they go and meet him later on, and seem to have about 45 minutes of missing time. So, So even the circle makers are actually making these things
mm-hmm.
deliberately with the board equipment, and they tell you what equipment they use. It's on the website.
Mm-hmm.
They don't keep that secret. They'd witness weird things going on in the field. So there's some obviously some energy there that's been interacted with.
Mm-hmm.
Now another interesting person. Have you heard of Jacques Vallée? Have you ever heard of him?
No.
Jacques Vallée If you remember the film Close Encounters of the Third Kind, have you watched that film, have you? Or?
Yeah, it's been a long time, but I think I might remember some of it, yeah.
They have a French guy in there, he speaks French all the way through.
Okay.
To the other guys. And he's a very knowledgeable researcher. That character, who's played by, it's called Lacom in the film.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on Jacques Vallée, who's a UFO
mm-hmm.
researcher.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jacques Vallée has suggested that the crop rock formations are the result of sophisticated electronic warfare experiments conducted by the defense contractors.
I could kind of go with that. Maybe let's say there's some type of, it would have to be, I guess, maybe not satellite or something, certainly way above the ground or above the ground, that is in a laser type of thing. But it would have to be a very stable platform, too, to make such, uniform, concentric, whatever these pictures are going. I would be open to accept that explanation.
You would think that. You automatically think of a beam coming from above and making the...
Mm-hmm. Let's say like a geosynchronous type of platform satellite or something.
Yeah, you'd think of something like that. Now, there may be other ways of doing it, which
mm-hmm.
I don't really have an answer, but I'll suggest. But there's another thing that you can look at. In fact, you might want to I'll just Google this now to check the right thing comes up.
Okay.
Because what you're saying there about a geosynchronous platform. Well,
mm-hmm.
how about trying to find some evidence that those things do exist? Would you believe that you might even possibly be able to find evidence that such things do exist?
What would you? What would we put into our search engine to find such a thing?
If you put in far above space and time.
Okay. Oops. Got to use. Never mind.
If you put in blip TV.
Okay. Fast, far above space and time on blip TV. Okay. Is there maybe something we could play that might work on the radio here? It's just loading.
You won't get any. Okay. He's got some background tones or music of some kind, but I don't think there's any speech. John Leonard Walson. I spoke to John Leonard Walson briefly.
Uh-huh.
He rang me up. Because when I first saw these videos, I was a bit skeptical that he was just messing about. But basically what John Leonard Walson has come up with is some kind of image manipulation system. I don't know whether it works in an optical sense or a digital sense or a combination of the two. He uses a 10-inch reflecting telescope, apparently. He explained this in one of the videos, the outline. And he's able to pick up these strange objects hovering in space. Nobody else can see. They seem to be somehow cloaked. But he's worked out a way of... I think he maybe makes a mirror vibrate or makes a little separate mirror vibrate and it oscillates the light coming out or something like this. I don't know quite how he does it.
Yeah.
But he has corresponded with some scientists, I think, at one of the universities in England. And they've seemed to have given him some feedback that these pictures are very, very interesting that he's getting.
Yeah, I'm looking at this, and again, I'm certainly open to accepting that it could be some form of digital something, but it's a rather odd-looking, I don't know really quite how to describe it, above space and time, .blip.tv. John Little Molson, 2008.
Yeah, and if you have a look at that, I mean, I actually know somebody who says that their father in the 50s and 60s was working for Lockheed on space platforms.
Really?
Yeah. But I've stayed with him, you know, it's not just some email.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a general consensus I've run across before, that, you know, that the technology that is admitted that is being operated is probably decades and decades. I started that out wrong. You know, it's like that. Okay, well, like the space plane, you know, that supposedly has been around for a very long time, meaning an aircraft that takes off as a regular jet, and then, of course, as the atmosphere gets basically to nothing, it turns into a pulse. Now, I have seen these pictures, supposedly, it's like sort of a contrail, it's these little balls, pulse, and then that gets this vehicle out of the atmosphere, and then it becomes a space vehicle, and then so the idea would be, say, from New York to Tokyo, you could make the journey in 2 hours.
Yeah. This is sometimes known as Project Aurora.
Yes. That explains, I think, a lot around Groom Lake or the Area 51 because of this craft. I suppose it's 130 feet long, it's triangular in shape, and it travels at least five times the speed of sound, so it makes its sonic booms make quite a registry on the seismographs. You know, so, I mean, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, there's also other interesting... I came across that story as well. But there's also other interesting craft, such as the TR-3B, which is this reputed to be this large flying triangle.
TR-3B.
Yep, the TR-3B, and that's I've got a clip on my YouTube channel of a chap called Edgar Fouché, who worked at Area 51 and has got, you know, to say that he did actually work there for a time in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually describes how this thing works. You know, it uses a mercury-based plasma, pressurized to 250,000 atmospheres, rotated at 50,000 revolutions per minute or something, and it's cooled to a temperature of something like minus 200 Kelvin or something. About 150 Kelvin, which is like minus 100 degrees centigrade or something like that. I've got this written down somewhere. So you know, we do get these the advanced technology leaking out,
mm-hmm.
and I believe that Project Aurora isn't the be all and end all.
No.
But we know, for example, that the SR-71 with the Blackbird,
yes.
the specifications for that are still classified. They still won't tell you its performance.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was first flown, I think in about 1974 or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Its specifications are still classified. So.
Well, yes, when I did a search on the TR-3B, you get a site called darkgovernment.com/TR-3B.
Right.
And just briefly, it says, a friend said he would never forget the sight of the alien-looking TR-3B based at Papoose, wherever that could
yeah.
be. A pitch-black, triangular-shaped TR-3B was rarely mentioned, and then only in hush whispers at the Groom Lake facility where he worked. The craft had flown over the Groom Lake runway in complete silence and magically stopped above Area S-4. It hovered silently in the same position for some 10 minutes before gently settling vertically to the tarmac. At times, a corona of silver blue light glowed around the circumference of the massive TR-3B. The operational model is 600 feet across, and it keeps going and going.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's it. You know, all kinds of stuff. Now, Jack's valet, going back to him,
mm-hmm.
He's one phrase that really came out when I first read this, and I've sort of come to Jack's valet, he knows stuff. I'm convinced he knows stuff. I think he knows a lot more than he's letting on. Because what he wrote in this article, you've got an article entitled Crop Circles, Signs from Above or Human Artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you'd find that if you Google it, because I found it online. And in this article he says that sooner or later the truth will be known,
mm-hmm.
and it can be used to discredit the community of paranormal researchers who have rushed to decipher alien scripts, informations, or have hypothesized a return of the Druids, Earthlights, or messages from Gaia without first testing the basic physics of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah,
maybe that such hypotheses have been coldly planted among the New Age milieu as part of a psychological warfare experiment, and that the real nature of the crop formations can thus be hidden from serious attention for a very long time.
Hmm.
Now, that really tweaked my interest.
Yeah.
And somebody sent me this article, or no, they didn't send me. I was talking to somebody at this local club I go to, and they told me, because I think it was published in, like, Nexus magazine or something, mm-hmm. which is one of these paranormal magazines, because this person like, told me this, they don't have the internet, and
mm-hmm.
then I came and Googled it and I found this.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next thing I'm going to go on to, which is kind of, you know, we are sort of following quite a reasonable sequence here,
uh-huh.
is a guy called Colin Andrews. Now, Colin Andrews, I've never met him, but he's a very interesting guy. I think he knows a lot. He's an electrical engineer by profession. And he became involved when crop circles were talked about in the British Parliament in the 1990s. Yeah.
His site is ColinAndrews.net.
ColinAndrews.net. He's got his own website. It's very interesting.
Mm.
Colin Andrews hasn't got the big picture, unfortunately.
Okay.
I have written to him mm-hmm. specifically about Nick Pope. Is Nick Pope a name that's familiar to you? Or?
No, I don't think so. Nick Pope.
Nick Pope is the UFO expert. He's kind of the Stanton Friedman of Britain.
Hmm.
If you know Stanton Friedman, don't you?
Sorry, not really.
Stanton Friedman? Oh, he surely knows Stanton Friedman. You must have heard of him. He's the big UFO guy from Canada.
It doesn't really ring a bell. I don't really look into this too much,
Stanton Friedman did a lot of the early investigation into the Roswell crash. He was one of the first investigators. I think in 1978 he started mm-hmm. to investigate that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that doesn't really matter. But so anyway, Nick Pope's a prominent UFO figure.
Mm-hmm.
Colin Andrews is probably the most prominent UK research figure, although he's sort of semi-retired now.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing is, Andrews supervised the largest surveillance project of its kind in 1990. It's called Operation Blackbird, and it was an effort to film a crop circle forming,
mm-hmm.
and it was backed and supported by the British Army, BBC,
mm-hmm.
and Nippon Television,
mm-hmm.
and it was watched closely by the international media.
Mm-hmm.
In an interview in Paranet, I've got a clip of this, he talked about the phenomena and shared his views on the use of microwave energy for the creation of crop circles.
Mm-hmm.
I'll see if I can play this clip. Let me just see if...
Oh, sure.
I was going to try this earlier, but I didn't quite get my thing going, so let's just see if I can find it. Microwaves, right. I don't know if this will work, so if we hear a big long silence...
Oh, that's no problem.
We'll come back to the Colin Andrews.net.
They also, down the middle of the index page, they have the trailer for the upcoming movie 2012. And their hypothesis is it's the Tibetan monastery at the top of a Himalayan mountain that is just about to get washed over by ocean water. I tend to doubt that that's what's going to happen, but interesting.
Playing that clip's not going to work, so I'm going to give up on that.
Okay.
But what he basically pointed out was that he was involved with uniformed military officers in crop circles in the UK, and he describes this incident where they actually did capture a crop circle forming on tape.
Really?
And they videoed it and they got it forming on tape. But the next day when they went to play this happened late at night, and you know, they had to take stuff back to where they were based.
Mm-hmm.
They put the tape in the machine, and it was a blank tape.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody had actually switched the tapes. He didn't know who it was. He never found that out.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that they'd caught this on tape. They had everything set up, you know, tripods and all this stuff, and the tape was substituted.
Well, you know, the Disclosure Project, it's been a little while since I looked into that. I played some of that. Stephen Greer, his Disclosure Project, was actually the National Press Club in D.C., and I believe that was May of 2001. And, of course, he's got hundreds of witnesses who are all, if they are not military officers or former military officers that had rather a high rank, they are enlisted people that had top security clearances, and they have lots and lots of interesting stories. One of the things that reminded me of was that they had this film. They were testing some type of ballistic missile, and then it was demolished, and when they played the film, they had like a telescope on it, and they played this film.
That's right.
There was this little light that was was just spinning all around this thing, and it just disintegrated. And also, I have around this area, you know, we're very close to D.C., which is probably not a good thing. But you know, there are missile silos here and there that we're not supposed to know about. But you know, people drink and they talk, and you know, there's been stories of objects which, you know, you maybe don't know what it is. They come over the missile silo. The missiles are powered down and rendered impotent. And there, I've heard that story quite a bit, so anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and Robert Jacobs is the guy who told the story about the film.
Mm-hmm.
And he also had that story verified by Sonny Mansman. I'm quite familiar with that story, because I've talked about that a number of times in public, you know. So, yeah, very, very interesting story, that one. And Robert Salas is one of the guys who... had the missile silo encounter, you know, the missiles shutting down, and Robert Hastings is another guy that's done a lot of research into that, and he was on Coast to Coast a few times. The other interesting slide I've got here in this presentation is what's called ghost formations. In other words, the crop is cut down at the end of the growing season, you know, in sort of late August, early September, whenever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But then what I've got here is 2003 formations are still visible in early 2004 crops.
Really?
Because a new crop is coming up through the ground, and you can still see the previous formation.
Oh, that's interesting.
And that was on Dusty Taylor's site. You are seeing changes in the soil which have been made, and you can't do that by border stamping, not to this degree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just not possible.
Hmm.
I've also got a page here of eyewitness accounts of crop circle formation with Colin Andrews witnessing them, Ed Sherwood witnessing them, let's see, Nancy Talbot, the one I mentioned with the beam of light coming down. It was 2001 she saw that. She was an eyewitness to the formation.
I sort of stumbled onto something here. It's called 2012 and crop formations. It's diagnosis2012.co.uk/CRO, and there are some here that I have not seen. Wayland Smythe, Oxfordshire, August 25. The Mexican TV presenter made much of these two formations, saying they encode the Maya
calendrical numbers and the date of the solar zenith conjunction of Venus and Pleiades on May 20 and 12, and the Venus transit. I mean, that's a lot of stuff going on there. You know,
it
a
is,
lot
yeah.
of you know.
And this is the thing, and this is what's really, you know, I was amazed, just like you're expressing your amazement. When I found this out, I was amazed by it. But now I've been thinking about it a bit more,
mm-hmm.
and what we're seeing with a lot of these circles, you know, and you need to probably spend half an hour Googling this, a lot of them are showing Mayan symbolism,
mm-hmm.
and 2012 references, and all this stuff like this.
Silver
so,
Wilshire just keeps popping up.
It does, yeah. As I say, that's the highest density of crop circles. But why is it the Mayan symbolism? Why is that being presented? I've seen newspaper articles presenting this.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, let's see, I'm going to skip forward a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if I can get the actual quote. So I want the actual quote from, I think I've got the actual quote. Let's see. Oh, where's it gone?
Oh, wow. Let me read this commentary.
Gotcha.
Silver Hill, Wiltshire, 20 and 2. A pentagram is the figure traced out by Venus over five of its 584-day cycles, which add to exactly 8 Hobs, which is 365-day years. There are 13 scales between each pair of arms, a total of 65.65 of the Venus cycles of 584 days, equal to one Venus round. 102 Hobs, which is 2 calendar rounds of 52 Hobs each. 65 is also the number of, I mean, it's a lot of thinking going on in making this. You know, it's like, somebody's doing a lot of thinking.
Going on. Oh, yeah. Now, I've got a quote here from this year.
Okay.
And it's from the Daily Telegraph, UK Daily Telegraph, at the 8th of July. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
just over a month ago, a couple of months ago now almost. A 350-foot crop circle of an ancient Mayan symbol, which is the Quetzalcoatl, as it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
The wing, what is it called? The Feathered Serpent, I think, is the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in the National... you know, broadsheet paper, the mainstream paper in the UK, well respected, not one of the tabloids, and it says, said to be a sign of impending apocalypse, has appeared next to Silbury Hill in Wiltshire, and it's Mayan symbolism, it's 2012, 350 foot long, and it's in this paper, and it's saying an impending apocalypse. Now, I want to go to something else that was also in that paper, and it's called Operation Blackjack. The Daily Telegraph, and this was, I think, was promoted on Alex Jones's website, unfortunately, but what he said was actually true in terms of Operation Blackjack was listed in the Daily Telegraph as a fictitious terrorist plot where they were going to set off a nuclear bomb in cities in Europe or in America, and it was actually a slideshow. I don't know if it was in the print newspaper, but it was on the website, and it was slide number 14, and it's got a picture on this slide number 14 of, it says, Union of North America, Citizen of Union of North America, and if you can Google this if you want. If you put...
I have Blackjack up, telegraph.co.uk, it says...
And then if you go to slide 14...
I have Blackjack part 4... I don't see a slide 14. I don't know.
Let's see which one it is.
Slide
part 4, yeah, it is part 4.
It's
right?
In part 4?
And
okay.
It goes to slide number 14.
Okay, part 4. Oops, part 4. Blackjack. This is the Telegraph website.
Yep.
Okay, I've got Blackjack part 4.
Yep.
Image... Am I doing this right? Okay, let me try it. Okay, 2 of 16, so you're saying it's 14. It's going to take a little while to load through it.
I think you can click forward more than once. There should be a little like index thing where you click to the... It doesn't matter if you have to click through, it won't take very long.
Mm-hmm.
4.
7. I don't know. I don't see any other...
You have to click through it. I think you can click... You can click a couple ahead because there's a little index bar at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And you can click on the right-hand one, which I think will take you 2 or 3 images ahead rather than 1. Yeah, I'm clicking through myself, so you can click on the right-hand one and it takes you 3 at a time.
Now I don't know if I got the right spot. What's it supposed to be showing?
Oh, it looks like they might have changed it again, because they changed this around.
Yeah, this is, I'm getting, what is that? It looks like the,
Let's just see.
Oh, well.
Oh, they've changed it.
Yeah.
They did, because, no, in fact, go to slide 15, sorry, it's slide 15, it is, yeah, I do apologize.
Hmm.
Have you got the one that's a slide 15, the Union of North America Department of Homeland Security?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. So you see at the bottom there, you've got a picture, right, an ID card and
okay.
a barcode on it.
Uh-huh.
And you can see there's that big long number in black lettering, 7469 something something something, big long number.
Yes.
Now, what somebody found was that if you take that,
uh-huh.
it's actually ASCII codes, it's actually hex codes. Right?
Okay.
If you've heard of hex codes.
Uh-huh.
So in other words, it's an encoded message, and if you decode it with an hex code to ASCII,
uh-huh.
you take that number sequence and paste it in, that message decodes and it says, this is not simply entertainment.
Really?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Union of yeah. North America, Department of Homeland Security and Oversight. All purchases, business, and financial transactions across the UNA must now be supported by a presentation of your UNA biometric identification card. UNA Oversight has the authority to close businesses that fail to demand sight of the card from all clients and customers. Citizens who fail to carry their card and present it upon demand could face unlimited jail terms.
Yep, well, that is a fictitious scenario that's presented by Operation Blackjack in
okay.
the Daily Telegraph.
Okay.
But that message that I just read you, this is not the entertainment,
uh-huh.
is encoded within that image. And they had another image as well, which said that something like this will be the last warning that is placed on these pages. And that was on image 17, but that was then deleted.
Mm.
There's a YouTube video about this. But I just want you to remember for a minute this idea of having this ASCII sequence encoded in this card, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the reference to the Mayan 2012 apocalypse coming in the crop circle, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to go back to the alien head, right?
Okay, okay.
Because the alien head, let me just go back a little bit here.
Okay, I might still have that.
So I'm getting this right. The alien head has got this circle in it, you know, the alien's holding the disc, yeah? You remember that, yeah?
Oh, I've got the, yeah. Okay, I've got the picture, yes.
Yeah?
Yes, this so disk is almost like a, yes, what type of code can be...
Well, if you go and look at that, and you can look at it close up, and you can decode this yourself,
uh-huh.
that is a sequence of bits, and it's read like a CD or a DVD, it's read from the inside out.
Really?
Right?
Uh-huh.
Yep. And it's a sequence of bits which decodes into a set of ASCII codes, okay?
Really?
And that message, when you read it, says, beware the bearers of false gifts and their broken promises... Much pain, but still time. Believe there is good out there. We oppose deception. Conduit closing.
Wow. Now, who decoded that to come up with that message?
It was a guy called, I think one of the first guys that did it was Paul Vigay.
Mm-hmm.
I met him. Now,
mm-hmm.
he's dead. He was
okay.
found dead last year.
Hmm.
They
didn't say he committed
suicide,
did he? Washed up on the beach. Hmm.
Yeah, but this was only last year.
Hmm.
So we've got an encoded message in this crop circle in an ASCII encoding sequence.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you compare this with the one that you were just describing about the encoding with Venus and all the planets and
yes.
whatnot, totally different language. Totally different language.
Coming up with basically the same thing. One thing you reminded me of is that apocalypse means awakening. People seem to think that it is some type of, you know, disaster
right.
or fire and brimstone, but it actually means awakening. So that could be
right.
all that's going to happen. Now, of course, the Mayan calendar, 21, 22, 23, December 2012, which is scarcely 3 years away, it says 3 days of darkness and shaking from above, and the calendar stops, but then, of course, you know, like the
yeah.
odometer on your motor vehicle, it does,
yeah.
once it comes to its end, it does start over again. So,
yeah.
And there's
yeah.
a whole story of, you know, on that time, the sun will be rising on the galactic equator or some such thing because we're not
yeah,
actually
yeah,
in
yeah,
the Milky Way and all that.
Center, yeah, yeah. The other interesting one you can Google quickly as well,
mm-hmm.
you Google Arecibo crop circle, if you Google that one, Arecibo is spelled A-R-E-C-I-B-O.
Uh-huh. And just
crop circle.
Okay.
Arecibo crop circle, and hopefully what you get up, there you get up.
Message formation.
And let's see if they've got...
Chilbolton.
Chilbolton, yeah. Now, that was 2001.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's interesting. Why 1679 digits? That number is the unique product of two prime numbers, 23 and 73. Any sufficiently intelligent life form would no doubt look for unique universal constructs, such as prime numbers, chemical element frequencies, and binary digits. Don't forget that because we could be trying to communicate with an intelligence completely different from our own, we cannot talk in terms of human systems such as centimeters, feet, decimal numbers, etc. Because only the two prime numbers, 23 and 73, when multiplied together, produce 1679, there can only be a single way to arrange the signal if you were converting it to a matrix grid, 23 squares by 73 squares. And then it has a picture of the original binary code.
So what that was, if you read through that, and you know, so we're going to skip through to the 9/11 connection in a minute, but there was a message sent out, designed by Carl Sagan in 1974 from the Arecibo telescope, and it contained encoded information about us, about our DNA. I think if you've got the same page I have, which is at cropcircleresearch.com.
Yes.
Is that the one you got?
Yes.
Yeah, and you see all those sort of block diagram, not block diagrams, but you see the sort of grid pattern, and it's made into a matrix diagram thing.
Oh, silicone.
If you read that, you'll see that the information was encoded about our solar system, the transmitter that was used to transmit the message, the DNA, and this crop formation, which came in 2001, was encoded as a reply to that message. So again, we've got a literal, you know, sort of language. It's not encoded in ratios or you know, diameters of circles like those other messages. So we're looking at some different type of encoding in these circles being used. We don't know what the source is, but
because
the language is different. That's what I really, the point I wanted to draw out, is that we've got these different types of language being used. Whoever's doing them, there is at least two different types of language being used. One's more literal than the other, and the other is more symbolic.
Because, yes, if you were going to come up with some form of universal language that any intelligent life form could decipher, it would be based on mathematics. I would think. I mean, that's a possibility. You know, I mean,
well. Well, I think it's hard to say for sure, but, you know, I think it's something to consider, certainly. But what I also found out regarding this, going back to the alien heads message, there were two different translations made. There was one guy called Maurice Osborne, and his was, started off the same. In fact, his was the one that I read out. I'll read it again. Beware the bearers of false gifts and their broken promises, full stop, period. Much pain but still time, period. Believe, period. There is good out there, period. We oppose deception, period. Conduit closing, comma. And that was the exact encoding of that asking message. But the first message that was encoded, that first decoding, which appeared on Lyndon Moulton Howe's site, earthfiles.com, it said, beware the bearers of false gifts and broken promises, period. Much pain but still time, period. And then it said, damaged word. The guy decoded that word. He missed off the believe. Then he said, there is good out there. And then it said, we oppose deception again, conduit closing, bell sound, which was the character 7, rather than the comma. And what somebody was pointing out is that one of these messages implies with the comma that it isn't finished, because the comma means a pause and there's more coming. But with a bell sound, which was used on an old teleprinter, it went ding when it got character number 7. That would mean the end of a message, you know, so the bell would go ding, so you'd go walk over to the printer and tear off the message. So people had made something, there was a difference in the decoding of this message, but, I mean, to find that encoded in a field in Wiltshire, I mean, it's pretty extraordinary, which, you know, whatever way of thinking you get to it by, it's just totally bizarre, you know.
I was just going to try to make a... comment. Yeah, I would like to get these guys with their board and their rope and have a talk to them. I mean, that's just an amazing amount of, you know,
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. I mean, when I spoke to Paul Vigier about that circle, I said to him, what did you think of that crop formation?
Mm-hmm.
He just said, I thought it was a hoax.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, it was just so different to all the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be a hoax.
Okay.
But he didn't really tell me how it was made. I mean, that's the thing. Nobody talks about the alien head. Nobody will talk about how it was made,
mm-hmm.
you know, who did it. Nobody admitted doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So how was it made? Who did it? You know, none of that. They won't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm going to talk about an incident I came across, which Colin Andrews reported, the British mm-hmm. crop circle researcher.
Okay.
And this involves Pat Delgado, Tim Good, and Nick Pope.
Tim Good and Nick Pope.
Yep.
Would that be G-O-O-D-E?
Yeah, G-O-O-D, yep. He's written a lot of UFO books. He came to this crop circle in 1989, although he wasn't there when this incident happened. The unusual events at White Crow occurred on the night of Saturday, Sunday, 17th and 8th of June,
mm-hmm.
1989, when six people climbed up Cheesefoot Head Hill and sat in a crop circle at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
Standing at the southern position with Colin, I was controlled to reach out and sweep energy from the sound into Colin's body. I do not know why. Colin then left me and returned to the group at the top of the circle. I turned towards the sound and my arms were being pulled over the crop, and with an even greater force on my body, felt it was being pulled upward and forward out of the circle at some perilous angle. With all the strength I could muster, I managed to withdraw my arms, gradually sink down and turn around so I was now facing north.
Hmm.
I eventually laid down on my stomach and began to inch my way up to the centre of the sloping circle floor, grabbing at bunches of flattened barley stems and pushing with my knees and feet. This is from Pat Delgado, who sadly died earlier this year, but he was 90 years old.
Hmm.
My progress was slow because whatever the short distance I made forward, a force kept pulling me back half that distance. I was becoming totally exhausted, and at that moment I wondered what I was fighting against. There was nothing tangible, but I was under the control of some force of incredible strength. I hung on as best I could. I called out to Colin to come and help me. I remember instructing him to come down the eastern edge of the circle in the crouching position, which he did until he was level with me.
Mm-hmm.
We inched our way towards each other until we grabbed hands, and it was then that both of us began to be pulled backwards and downwards. Fight against this force, we managed to break away from it and crawl to the side of the circle. And still crouching, we quickly worked our way back to the group on the north side.
Mm-hmm.
And then he continues. For some minutes, we sat there answering questions as to what had happened, when suddenly, and this was the bit really caught between my antenna,
mm-hmm.
some force levitated me to a height just brushing the flattened crop and floated me to the east side of the circle. Now I was feeling really scared. What force could have moved me a distance of about 3 meters while still in the same sitting position?
Hmm.
It was here that I called to Colin and the others to join me, and a few minutes after we all decided to leave the circle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, connection with Nick Pope to this is that in 2002, November or December, what was happening was there was a dispute between Colin Andrews and Nick Pope. Nick Pope was saying that the government had no interest in crop circles. The Department of Defense had expressed no interest in crop circles ever because okay. there was just nothing of interest to them.
Mm-hmm.
But that, of course, completely contradicts what I mentioned earlier when Colin Andrews had with him in the field, and I've seen photographs of this, uniformed military officers in the area where they were studying crop circles. So that was in, and that, of course, they were uniformed from the MOD, you know, the Ministry of Defence people, because mm-hmm. they were in the army.
Mm-hmm.
So this completely contradicted what Nick Pope was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick Pope has said in this article, I have to refute the bizarre idea that the formations were caused by the testing of space-based laser or directed energy weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And dispelled suggestions that media coverage of the issue had been stifled by the use of denotices.
Mm-hmm.
So what have we got here now? Microwaves, levitation,
mm-hmm.
directed energy weapons, and we've also got residual effects.
Hmm.
people go into these crop circles and they report feeling ill. Mm-hmm. Their effects last for several days afterwards, after these things are made. So how would we make a crop circle? Let's think how we would do it. Well, we can make a crop circle by pressing down on the crop.
Mm-hmm.
What do we need to do that? We need an increased force of gravity. What about if this whatever's making these crop circles is switching gravity on and off?
Mm-hmm.
What about if it's the same technology that was used to destroy the World Trade Center?
Mm. You know, it's interesting. Today there was, I've been trying to go around and listen to different AM talk radio programs. There is one here locally. They seem to be decidedly on the left, you know, if there is such a difference as right and left. But and there's another one, a national one. I believe her name is Laura Ingram, I think, and decidedly on the right. Now, there was a individual who Obama is, I guess, wants to be some type of these bizarre czar terms of some kind. And he was criticized for signing a statement in 2004 about a so-called 9/11 truth something petition or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this individual, this Laura Ingram, she read through the positions that were on this statement, and they were just, you know, standard questions about what happened. And at the end of all that, and, you know, this is a whole big litany of questions, legitimate questions, she just said, basically, those are crazy left-wing questions. And that's it. I mean, what kind of... She didn't address them at all. You know, and really with a lot of things I look into, myths, you know, sacred stories, it basically comes down to the best evidence against the story is that there is no evidence for the story. You know, and this one thing, this we're just skirting around the edge of it, but that's why I started this program almost 6 years ago, is because the story is fantastic and it is impossible, you know, and at this point, you know, I mean, just the evidence of there being no evidence of any crashed Boeings. If a Boeing was going to crash, there would be an astonishing amount of evidence. You know, blah, blah, blah. I almost feel silly saying this, but, you know, of course, the original impact damage at the Pentagon is evidence of more of a bunker buster. It is a 10-foot by 16-foot hole going through three rings, 9.5 some feet of steel enforced concrete, and the exit wound is very cylindrical. And then, of course, Shanksville, in a hole, is very odd. There is no Boeing wreckage. And, of course, you know, if you just watch the video that we are supposed to believe, oh, well, of course, what do you mean there's no planes? I saw the plane on the TV. Well, you know, the famous one that was used by the, what was the ones, 9/11 in plain sight. This is obviously a cartoon plane hitting a cartoon building because there are no, it does not take a physicist to understand that there are no crash physics available. It is a ghost plane that goes into the building, it disappears, the building mends itself, and then of course there is an explosion. We have interesting ideas, coincidences of, namely Kenny Johanneman, people who testified that they saw explosions out of nowhere. You know, and this I guess is forces Alex Jones's point, or at least, you know, whether it would almost have to be intentional, because his whole point, the Genesis Communication Network, they want you to believe in the idea of hijacked aircraft. Well, you know, one of the questions on this thing that this lady read off, and it was the 04 petition or whatever it was. Well, you know, why weren't the planes intercepted? Well, if there's no plane to intercept, then of course they weren't intercepted. You know, but the story is has been rather explained to a very exhaustive degree at this point. You know.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think the other thing with this as well is there's always alternative groups. I mean, I've made this point on a couple of other talks I've done. You know, that this Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth group, which claims to have whatever it is, 300 or 600 members, you know, about who are skeptical of the 9/11 story, and they've got these, you know, web page postings. They've got quite a natty website, looks quite professional, and they're saying, well, we're calling for a new independent investigation into the events of 9/11, and I'm thinking, well, take the World Trade Center, for example, you've got 300 and odd members, can't you come up with an investigation yourselves, you know, as you're all architects and engineers, so surely you've got the expertise to produce an independent report funded by yourselves, I mean, I wrote my own report on chemtrails. I did it myself. It didn't cost me anything. No. And I posted it on the internet, and it's an independent report. Now, people can take it or leave it, you know, but it isn't an independent report. So why aren't architects and engineers coming up with their own independent report, you know, and maybe doing some type of, you know, open investigation that they've televised, you know, or something. And they're not doing things like that, because they know that once they did that, people with real scientific credentials would see the holes in all this second layer of cover-up, and they'd either go back to the official story because they knew that this alternative theory wasn't credible, or they would begin to see that, you know, the rest of the evidence points to something far more surprising and sophisticated, which is, you know, what you and I and the doctor would have talked about before. So,
well, never, you know.
We're seeing this renewed, these renewed calls for an inquiry now, and I don't, it's just it doesn't mean anything, because we've already got an inquiry which has been done, and that's the one that's been done by Dr. Wood. You know, so.
Well, never, and I am certainly open to looking at anyone's opinion and anyone's evidence, but never, and like in the work of Dr. Wood or yourself or, you know, just common sense observations of lots of people, never have I heard anyone support the story, the sacred myth that we are supposed to believe, with any kind of evidence other than name calling. And that it just, you know, it doesn't cut it, you know. I mean, you I mean, this story, this bizarre, wild conspiracy theory, and now of course they're saying, oh, the Taliban did it. First it was Osama, and then it was this who is this KSM, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. One thing Jones pointed out was that this was an individual who was reported shot dead, and then 1 year later they arrested him and were going to torture his children because it was good for the, you know, the cause. So, I mean, and these are just, those are facts, you know. You know, the whole thing is just, this is so absurd, you know, I mean. So, you know, where
it
do
is,
go from
you
here?
Know, it's frustratingly absurd, absolutely, and, you know, it's really a sign of how clearly people can think for themselves as to how absurd they can judge the official story to be, I think, you know.
And is this absurd, like that these national talk shows, I guess they're right-wing, I don't know, again, you know, right-wing, left-wing, I don't know what's going on, but, of course, now they're saying that the Taliban did this. So, of course, you know, we need to be in Afghanistan, losing all of our troops at the rate, absurd rate now. We need to be there because the Taliban attacked us. Okay, well, how did they? How did the Taliban cause the United States military to stand down? I mean, that's just, it's insane. Anyone that believes in any portion of this official story, you know, now I think maybe it's not conscious, but you are either traitorous or just plain idiotic, you know. I mean, and it just, wow, beat that story to quite a degree. But, you know, until it's resolved, there it is. And
it is so problematic, as you say, and I think obviously there's a lot of emotion tied up with it, and that blocks your analytical skills anyway. You know, because people, they like they got the flags out straight away and they draped them across the remnants of the buildings, didn't they? And that was done, I think, within 24 or 48 hours. You know, and those big signs up saying "We will never forget." And that's just a huge, great big distraction, because people walking past down the street on that day will see "We will never forget." They won't actually look at all the smouldering, fuming, and think, what the hell is that still doing? And, you know, all they'll see is this "We will never forget" and the flags, and they'll think, oh, you know, we've got to go and get revenge for this, you know.
Okay. Well, Andrew, time went very quickly. We have just a minute or so. Next show is here. We need to get out of their way. You know, maybe just wrap it up, or, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do next week. I think I want to focus on just the concept of psychological warfare, because that's
sort of as my comment to that, in case it wasn't clear on. I think that psychological warfare extends into the crop circle phenomenon. That's really what I was, you know, I think Jacques Vallée is right. I don't think it's exclusive of that. I think there's other stuff going on. I think a lot of the New Age movement has been hoodwinked into this Mayan 2012 stuff, and that therefore obscures the study of actually how these things are physically made, what's the technology involved, and who might be responsible for it, you know.
Okay, well, Andrew Johnson, checktheevidence.com. Thank you very much for joining us. And, you know, I don't know, maybe we could work on something next week for the PsyOps war stuff.
Maybe we could. I'm not sure what I'm doing next
and,
week.
And
yeah, we
should. Or you know, at some point, you know, maybe
it
would be nice to talk to Dr. Wood again or even John Hutchinson or something.
Well, we can maybe arrange that too. Yeah, okay, who knows?
All right, sir. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, you take care then.
All right, you too. Okay.
Okay. Bye for now.
Yes. Super Loose on the way momentarily.
I don't care to say what I feel.